Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to A Fair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. Hi, welcome to A Fair Recovery Radio tonight, and this is Rick, and tonight we have a special treat because actually all four of us are here.
It's a party.
It's a party. Wayne, Leslie, and John, and we are certainly glad that you've joined us, and as we said in the intro there, the views and opinions expressed on this program certainly are not necessarily those of the station or the advertisers, but they may be, so you never can tell. So tonight, we actually have a very special topic, and what we want to talk about is the impact of infidelity affairs, pornography within a marriage, what the impact is on the children. And we'd actually like to kind of throw out a provocative question tonight, and I want you guys to weigh in that are listening out there tonight. The question is, do you think you should stay in a marriage for the sake of the kids? In other words, are your children enough reason to ultimately stay in a marriage? Now, if you want to reach us tonight, we can be reached at area code 512-365-9930. That's 512-365-9930. Or you can call us if you're listening nationally through our web streaming at 888-5-ARC-EMS. That's 888-5-ARC-EMS. Or if you'd rather not have your voice on the air, you most certainly can email us then at rick@hope-now.com. That's rick@hope-now.com. And again, what we're looking for is just your opinion on, do you think you should stay in a marriage for the sake of the kids? Because I know that certainly in our office, that is a hotly discussed topic. Many couples come in and that are dealing with an affair, and certainly one partner is saying to the other one, you know, for the sake of the kids, we need to work this out. The other person saying it really won't have that much impact on the kids. So what's your opinion? We'd really like you guys to begin to weigh in, and in fact, maybe I'll ask the staff to start weighing in, or at least we can talk about some other things tonight, because we really do want to look at this more than just how it impacts children or whether we should stay, but how this does impact children. So, guys, y'all have anything you want to start off with tonight?
Well, I think I'd probably want to just throw out there that we really encourage you, if you have questions about the kids, too, because I think when we talk about the topic of kids, when it's dealing with an infidelity situation or a divorce situation, that people tend to have lots of emotions wrapped up in this kind of thing. And generally, when people get married, they don't expect to have to face this at any point. So, you know, what to do with the kids is never in the instruction manual. It's certainly not in your expectations when you're going into this thing. So, you know, if you have any questions or places where you got stuck or stories you'd like to tell, we encourage you to give us a call, too. I've also noticed that maybe you guys have seen this, too, is that people tend to have lots of guilt when their kids are involved for sometimes things that aren't even, you know, within their sphere of control. But that seems to be something I've seen a lot is guilt with this thing.
Well, and just to remind you all, those of you who may not be familiar with the four of us and our stories, John and I come from divorce situations and are currently in a blended family, and Wayne and Rick have been able to preserve their marriages, and so we all have different perspectives here. So feel free to ask us just about anything.
And we all have children, so we've certainly seen a lot with kids, plus what we've seen with our own clients as they've come through our office. So please give us a call on this. Again, let me give the numbers. That's area code 512-365-9930 or 888-5-ARC-EMS. Or again, you can email us at rick@hope-now.com.
com. So when you're looking, guys, at your own practice, and what some of the things you've seen happen to children as a result of parents and their inability to handle their pain as they go through an affair?
Well, one of the things that I see a lot, I see perfectly sane, reasonable people spin out in the midst of the pain and expose their kids to a lot of anger, a lot of hatred, a lot of really destructive things, and the kids don't know what to do with it. And a lot of times, kind of going back to John talking about guilt, the parents in their guilt want to pretend like the kids didn't hear, but they did. And so that's one of the things that I just see over and over.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I frequently see is parents, you know, kind of going with that guilt thing that sometimes, you know, parents feel so bad about what's happening that they effectively stop being parents. And it's kind of what I sometimes call the Nintendo dad or the Nintendo mom syndrome, where suddenly you try to either be the kid's best friend or you try to just really, out of your guilt, go to Toys R Us and load them up just to, because you're feeling so bad about their pain that you kind of want to, you know, find some superficial way to medicate that pain, but you're not really dealing with the underlying issues of what's causing the kids to feel so bad.
Yeah, or I see them just check out completely. Like you said, Leslie, great parents that are sane, intelligent, normal folks, they just check out completely of that relationship and don't have a clue what to do.
And so if any of you out there listening have actually exposed your kids to things that you feel guilty about, what we would suggest to you is the damage isn't irreparable, that there are ways to address it. And so I guess, what are some of the things that you all would recommend to parents in this situation?
Well, I think one of the things I would say first is just, you know, kind of dovetailing on what you just said, is just be willing to forgive yourself and recognize mm-hmm. that you're not perfect. I mean, I think there's not a person sitting in this room who's done everything right as a parent. You know, in fact,
Leslie has.
She likes to think so sometimes. But.
Thanks, Wayne.
You know I'm your biggest fan.
But none of us as parents get this thing totally right. And I think just being able to, you know, we sometimes think that we expect the worst from our own failures or things we've done with our kids. And you know, kids are remarkably resilient little creatures. And it's amazing what you know, God can do with them and sort of how they can get to a place of healing. And whereas, you know, even some of the bad things can actually end up being, you know, sort of hidden blessings in their lives, too, and can be transformed into really, really good things, you know. And so I guess one of the first things I would say is just, you know, forgive yourself for not being perfect and don't hold yourself to an impossible standard that way, and recognize that no matter what's happened, there's, you know, there can still be healing from it.
One of the things that I think is, if you've made the mistake of maybe including your kids in the process of your affair, you can always do good by getting them back out of it. I think one of the biggest mistakes we make is actually involving kids in what's ultimately occurring. And I don't know how you guys feel about that, but that's actually called triangulating the kids into that marital relationship. And especially if you've lost a spouse or it feels like you've lost a spouse to an affair, and they've got this affair partner they're talking to, and suddenly you don't have your best friend to talk to, it is very easy to begin to then talk to your kids and let your kids be your confidant. And at that point, you actually begin, I think, again, don't beat yourself up for this, but you begin to kind of rob your kids of their childhood. And because now they're having to play the role of a spouse. And the clinical term for that is called spousification. But certainly we don't want to include our kids and let them be our confidant. Hopefully we can find, or God can bring, other friends into our lives that can begin to play that role, so that our kids don't have to bear a burden that is far too heavy for them at their young age.
Right, because one of the things I think we would all tell clients is, regardless of what your mate is doing or not doing, do not bash your spouse to your child. You're just destroying your child. I think one of the biggest challenges, though, is if you disagree with what your mate is doing, how do you communicate to your kids that you don't think their parent is making good choices without bashing them? I don't know if you all would have thoughts on that.
I think it's a very fine line, but I think, you know, I think that anti-bashing, you know, prohibition is a very, very important one. I mean, and I think sometimes parents don't even realize that they're doing it. They're just sort of, their anger is sort of oozing out all over, and they would, you know, in some cases insist that they're not saying anything bad about the other parent in the presence of the child, but the child's picking up all this negative energy that's coming out.
And I know that there's got to be somebody out there that's got an opinion on whether or not you should stay in the marriage for the sake of the kids. And guys, this is a call-in program. We want you to call in. I mean, we can talk all day long. Trust me, we can get to staff meeting.
Especially
and,
Rick.
I know.
Talk and talk and talk.
So you have the power to shut us up. So.
But if you've got your own opinion, there we go. Somebody's calling. That's a good thing. But if you've got an opinion, we certainly want you to weigh in on this thing, because it's something that I think we can all learn from each other as we begin to look at real life situations and how to work through these sorts of things. Okay, so we've got an anonymous caller here, and. Do you have a question for the four of us? We certainly hope so.
Or an
at least
opinion.
A comment, an opinion on do you think that you should
or a
stay?
Story.
Whatever.
Even a good joke.
I would like to say something. I am so impressed. Wait a minute. Let me back up. I thank you all for what you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
And I mean that. I've never heard this station. I happen to be heading home from a long-distance trip. But I do want to address something in the fact that we've had a situation in our marriage, and we have a son that will not even, he's grown now, but he's in his late 20s, and he will not have anything to do with us.
And why won't he have anything to do with you?
He's very bitter. He's very angry. Well, first of all, he got mixed up with a young lady that just he shouldn't have, and one thing led to another, and she kept pumping his brain of, you know, we've caused him all his problems, blah, blah, blah. And we've spoke with him about the Lord. We've told him, you know, we've made a mistake. I chose to stay. My husband chose, you know, to stay. I mean, it was just, I'm not going to go all into it, but I know that it was very, very bad. It was a bad time, a bad situation, and y'all are so true. You do tend to turn to your kid when the spouse is disconnected or...
Absolutely.
Or has pulled away.
Right.
The opposite spouse does tend to do that. And not always do they think it through. Sad but true, we don't. But I did that.
How
but
long?
I, too, was very bitter and angry and came back and to do anything I could to hurt my husband. And I knew better. That was not. I knew the Lord. I knew that was not the way to do it. Not the way to handle it deep down, but in the midst of it, I really didn't know how to get through that pain.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And anyway, another thing I want to, as far as an opinion, I'd like help on knowing how to turn this around with our middle child where he won't talk. He won't talk with his. He's just now coming back to speaking to his siblings. I mean, his other siblings. But at any rate, that's been a big issue, and it's bothered me. I don't know what to do. We don't know. We've prayed about it and prayed about it, and it's like, okay, Lord, we want it now. And it's been, you know, let me say he's 28 or will be, and this happened when he was like 19. And it's just been, he has a lot of anger, a lot of bitterness. And it's like we're a disgrace to him, although we kept it, you know, it wasn't something
right.
that everybody knew. It was very private. It wasn't all around town, you know, or anything. Still.
Right.
He went through a real bad time of drinking himself, bitter, angry.
Yeah, you know, I think that my mentor, when... I was first going into my own recovery years ago, was telling me a story about one of his children that had become extremely angry with him he had actually written some books, and he was telling me one of his kids had actually read one of his books, and he said, "Honest, Rick, I thought we had told all of them. They had five kids," and he said, "I guess we missed one." And when she had read the book, she had gotten really angry and kind of did that sort of cut off. And he said, "You know, the only thing I could say to her because of her disappointment in us was that, you know, your daddy needs a savior too." And other than just, I think, making amends to a child, I mean, I don't know how the other four, what they're going to say here, but making amends for the pain that was inflicted on them as a result of your failure, I don't know what you do. I mean, now you can sit there and at least show them maybe how God has transformed your pain and made it into something really good. But it sounds like your son doesn't know what to do with his pain and how to carry that. And boy, I tell you, that's a tough one, because those are lessons that maybe God has to teach him.
Well, I realize that. And you know what's amazing? I didn't say I had five kids.
Yeah.
And you said it. The other four, that's amazing to me. But I did have five. So that tells me. At any rate, but something, as far as my opinion, I would like to, I appreciate what you said, I do, and I would suggest to anyone, if you've, there's a book called, it's written by Jimmy Evans, and he and his wife, I believe this is a pastor out of Dallas, Fort Worth area.
He's actually out of Amarillo.
Amarillo, okay. And they wrote a book, or he did, and I don't know if y'all have heard it, but I highly suggest this. When I go speak, I also speak in churches, wherever they ask me, wherever they allow me.
Good for you.
I go and I share my story. We have it's just an incredible story. We had a son that was diagnosed with a disease that is a killer, and, you know, and God turned that around, and they thought I was just in denial and a crazy woman, and I stood on God's word, and I said, nope. And it took a year, but God, you know, it came through. And so I know what God can do. I know. And we've had one that's incarcerated. You know, there's just a lot of things. And I go and I speak and I share our story. And I share mine and I share how no matter what rock bottom you're sitting in, at that moment, we can't always see that light. But if we'll sit back, be still, and just say, Lord, I'm not worthy, but through you I can be. And if you'll take and turn this around, I know that I can be great for you. Not for myself, not for anyone else, but for you.
Absolutely.
Pardon me?
I said absolutely, and it sounds to me like actually you've probably done one of the most important things that you could have for your children's healing. And I believe that's modeling choosing God. Because as they watch you and they see what you're doing, who God is to you, what the transformation of the pain into something powerful, that's really the greatest gift you can be giving all of your kids, in my opinion.
No, I agree. I think sometimes, you know, one of the greatest things that we can do is model our imperfections as well. I mean, you know, there comes a point where every parent kind of falls off the pedestal, no matter how well they try to do it. You know, we're going to mess up. We're going to do things that, you know, that aren't so great. And when we can really be honest about that, like you're talking about, and just sort of kind of keep pointing back to God with that, you know, that's a real gift. And I really commend you for that.
So thanks for calling.
I want to say I do believe that you should stick together.
Well, thank you for weighing in on that, and we're up against a break. So, guys,
if
you have any questions,
thank you for calling
so much. And, again, you can call us 365-9930. That's 365-9930. Or you can email us at rick@hope-now.com. Or if you're listening nationally, you can call us at 888-5-ARC-EMS. Thank you. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Listen to what others are having to say about the Emergency Marital Seminar offered by the Affair Recovery Center.
This EMS weekend was very meaningful for me, and I feel it moved us along in such a positive way. I truly see success and forgiveness in the future.
Thank you so much. I came here for my wife. but I left with my life.
It was incredible to see God intervene in our marriage in such a visible way. Miraculous doesn't even begin to describe it.
You made this so easy for us to follow and understand, so comfortable.
As you can tell from past participants, the Emergency Marital Seminar has had a profound impact on the couples who have attended. If your marriage is at a point of crisis, we would like to invite you to come join us March 30th, 31st, and April 1st to be a part of this life-changing event. We can be reached at area code 512-346-9299, or you can go to our website at affairrecovery.com. Do you believe in modern-day miracles? I do. Because daily, I witness them as couples who are torn asunder by infidelity are reconciled. Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, founder of the Affair Recovery Center. Please join us each Sunday evening from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time at Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God, where we witness on an ongoing basis the miracles of God. We have seen and witnessed that there is nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Hi, my name is Gretchen Smith. You're listening to The Word 99.3 and 98.5, teaching and talk for Austin and Central Texas.
Welcome back to ARC Radio, Radio to the Power of God. And it's my cohorts here, the four of them. Actually, they're saying there's only three. Anyway, they have told me.
I brought both of myself tonight.
Which isn't a good thing.
I never have been very good at counting. Math was not my strong point. I don't even know what my strong point was.
Trauma.
Yeah, exactly.
They did distraction.
Exactly. That magna cum laude, that, you know, summa cum laude. It was Lottie Lottie. They let him go. But one of the things our last caller brought up, which I think is really interesting, is the pain that our children experience as a result of our infidelity. And certainly I know that in my family, my children have experienced pain. In fact, it would probably be another good program topic. Somebody write this down for how do you tell your children about your affairs. And that'd be a fun program, because I certainly have done that with my kids. And I'd love to hear what some of you others that have had that experience, what that was like for you. But one of the things that an author named Richard Rohr talks about that I really appreciate is that if pain is not transformed, that ultimately it will be transmitted. And it's our inability, I think, often as adults to know what to do with our pain that causes that pain to ultimately be transmitted to our children. And there's probably no place that may be more true than where there is an affair and where, you know, that pain, my inability to know what to do with that pain, it impacts others. And if you don't mind, I'm going to actually give maybe a personal example. My dad may be listening in here, so he'll be really excited to hear that I'm going to tell a story on him. But when my dad was a very, very young man, actually a little baby, about 6 weeks old, he was placed too close to a fire, and his feet were burned off. And his family was a very poor family. They were sharecroppers. And for that reason, they didn't have a lot of resources to be able to do anything for Dad. In fact, being a poor family, they really couldn't afford to have a child that was crippled. And his parents actually didn't have a lot of ways to know how to deal with their pain. And oftentimes when I think about generational sin and how things are passed on from one generation to the next, I really think that occurs partially by the pain that we inflict on our own children as a result of our inability to know what to do with our pain. And so Dad was wounded by his own parents and their inability to know how to respond and how to accept him as someone that wasn't whole. And so they continued to press him to be someone who wasn't a cripple. And so his disability actually became a point of deep shame for him. And he learned to appear to be someone that wasn't a cripple. In fact, not knowing what to do with his pain, all he did was worked really hard at image management. I don't know if any of you guys have ever tried image management, but it's a great way to at least appear not to be in pain. But again, pain that's not transformed is ultimately transmitted. And so, as I grew up, Dad began to give us life messages. Those life messages were things like, never let anybody see your weakness. That you need to always keep a stiff upper lip. Any job worth doing is worth doing perfectly. Never make a mistake. Just things like that. And again, those messages were given with the best intent. But in reality, there was also a flip side to the message that my father was delivering to me and to my brothers. And the flip side of that message was this. Because if people really find out who you are, what they're going to find out is you're actually inadequate. Because if you really do show weakness, they'll discover that you're really crippled. And again, he was not trying to transmit those messages to us. But his inability to know what to do with that pain within him ultimately was transmitted. And that pain that I had, again, in my attempt to avoid my pain in my life, ultimately I looked to everything, drugs, alcohol, affairs. I did anything I could to ultimately avoid my pain, that feeling of inadequacy. Because my dad, and again, I'm not blaming my father, just didn't know what to do with his pain. And that pain had been transformed in him, and God had not taught me how to transform the pain in me, and therefore my untransformed pain was transmitted against my wife, and she was incredibly wounded by the choices I made in my attempts to avoid my own discomfort. I mean, my own narcissism, my own selfishness, my own self-centeredness really began to wound those around me, and also inflict wounds on my children. And as I look at that type of scenario, I think that frequently, because we in marriage relationships don't know what to do with pain, inadvertently we'll begin to transmit that pain on to our children. And if we don't allow God to begin to work in us, if we don't allow Him to teach us to learn the lessons of the Paschal Mystery, so to speak, to learn the lessons of the cross, to learn what it means to be able to suffer and to walk with God through suffering, then ultimately we're going to have all kinds of problems. I mean, I think most Christian countries as a whole really don't know what to do. I heard once that instead of learning how to deal with suffering, what we tend to do is we work with ascent, accumulation, and I forget what the other A is, or addictions. I mean, we have ways that we avoid dealing with things rather than learning how to walk through them. And so as we talk about tonight, you know, what do we do and how does our infidelity impact our children? To me, one of the things is to learn the meaning of suffering and to learn how to let God carry us and how to let God transform our pain. I don't know if you guys want to comment on any of that since I've been rambling on here, but
No, I would just get a great big ditto on that. I mean, I think in American society particularly, there's this sort of emphasis that we have to immediately do away with our pain or find some way to medicate it. Like Rick says, you know, go out and buy something new, kind of make it go away. And I think it was Thomas More who talked about making sort of the shift from trying to cure our pain to allowing God to sort of care for our pain and walk and abide in our pain and actually spend a little time there and see what, you know, what we might learn in that time and what gifts might be revealed in that time. And that's not the, you know, the real tendency, you know, with American culture. When we have a headache, we tend to reach for the aspirin right away and immediately try to make that pain go away. But I think there can be tremendous value in that. Not that you want to go out seeking pain, but, you know, pain is unfortunately an inevitable part of life, and that it can be a very informative and growth-producing thing if we allow God in at that point.
Well, and I think one of the things that can sometimes happen is people don't deal with their pain. They try to pretend like everything is okay. And so kind of the second most common thing that I see people do with their kids in the midst of infidelity is they try to shield their kids from what's going on. And kids will feel strain and pressure and tension. And I've had clients who come in and say, well, you know, I've been trying to not cry in front of my kids. And I'll say, you know, it's okay to cry in front of your kids. It's okay for your kids to see your pain, because sometimes people will not talk about their pain. And definitely, you know, don't put your kids in the middle of it. But as you don't say, you know, things aren't going well, your kids will think things are worse than maybe they even are. And that's a great way that people unintentionally transmit pain to their kids, is by not talking about it.
Absolutely. I mean, my tendency is to do that very thing. I mean, I want to shield my daughter from pain at all costs sometimes. And kids are funny little creatures, and they have this kind of very well-tuned radar. They know when things aren't going well. They can pick up when there's anxiety and tension in the house. And if you tell them that everything's okay when they know full well that it's not, that just adds to their anxiety. And instead of making them feel better, they tend to, you know, really start spinning out at that point.
Or they'll feel like they have to take care of your pain.
Right, and I want to remind you guys tonight, you can still call in, area code 512-365-9930. The question that we're actually talking about tonight is, do you think you should stay in the marriage for the sake of your kids? And I know I keep bringing us back here, but we'd like some more callers, because, again, we think there's a lot of richness that happens when this community actually begins to speak up and kind of wrestle with issues like this and what to do with our kids. One of the things, Leslie, you brought up just a few minutes ago was the issue of how do you talk to your kids without bashing your mate when they're doing something that, like an affair, that you don't think is appropriate. So anybody have any ideas of what in the world you can say about, like, what could Stephanie have said about me to Megan when I'm not there because I'm with an affair partner or something like that? I mean, what? How does she say that in a way that doesn't bash the bejeebies out of me?
And how old was Megan?
Well, she was young at that point, so it wouldn't have made a lot of difference to a 3-year-old, right?
Right, but...
Well, it would have made some difference, but certainly, like somebody said earlier, 19-year-old is going to be very different.
Right.
So, what do you guys say? You have any ideas? Okay, pregnant what? Pause.
No, we have lots of ideas. We're just trying to be polite, right?
Right. No, I mean, to me, it goes back to the old, you know, lesson I learned from Bambi back in elementary school. You know, if you can't say something nice at all, don't say it at all. I mean, if there's any question that you might sort of spill over there, you know, then you know, try not to talk to your kid about that parent, you know, or sort of a bare minimum. Talk about sort of what, you know, the logistics of the upcoming visit or something like that. But anything that sort of goes over into editorial commentary, you know, you really got to really catch yourself.
Well, my rule of thumb is don't give them more information than they really need. If they're asking questions, answer the question and no more. You know, if you're talking about affairs or teaching them about the birds and bees or whatever, that there's just some standard rules, I think, that kind of apply. You know, just answer the question and see how they're feeling. If that was enough, think, okay, that was good for today.
No, and I agree, right? And I think there's an age-appropriate,
right,
kind of quality to that. You have to really prayerfully consider about sort of what is a good answer for a 3-year-old as opposed to a 10-year-old or as a, you know, a 15-year-old perhaps. And
yeah, so what do you say, John, when I'm going to throw you under the bus here?
He's good at that.
He's been trying to throw somebody under the bus.
So what do you say, John, when your kid asks, you know, your 10-year-old says, you know, why are you so mad at Daddy right now?
I mean, I think if all else fails, you can just say, you know, Daddy made a bad choice and or something like that. Kind of keep it generic. It's not avoiding the issue, but you don't have to go into graphic detail either about, you know, what he was doing, you know, or where he was or who he was with or that sort of thing. And it's, you know, I think it's okay for a woman to be able to express that she's upset with him, but without trying to pull the child into it.
Yeah, because even with a 3-year-old, a lot of times I'll really encourage clients to tell their 3-year-old who has noticed that things aren't going well to say, you know, Mommy's not very happy with Daddy right now. We're working on things. We both love you, and that will never change. Because a lot of times I find that parents will promise kids things that they can't promise. They will say things like, we'll never get divorced, or we're going to fix this. And I really discourage people from making promises they can't keep.
Well, and just like the betrayed spouse, with kids not knowing a little bit about what's going on, don't you think just like the betrayed spouse, they can imagine the worst possible situation?
Oh, sure.
And
they
with,
usually do.
Yeah, with that, you know, that, I don't know all my parts of the brain, but the frontal lobe that's not developed, that adds to the rational cognitive mm-hmm. piece, that has not even begun to be developed yet. So they're living in this emotional, irrational world. So their imaginations are just, you know, they're
definitely
selling me to the gypsies and they're leaving.
Well, exactly. Particularly little kids tend to be very, very concrete in their way of thinking. You know, an example that comes to mind is when someone has died, and sometimes parents trying to spare the child a pain will say something like, the angels came and took your grandma away, or something.
In her sleep.
Oh, exactly. And so the kids are suddenly terrified of angels because...
Or sleep.
They can't think abstractly or you know, kind of think that way.
Maybe so, that's Rick's problem. Maybe that's why he doesn't sleep.
Okay, but we're off subject.
Topic for another
exactly. show. That'd be a good topic, actually. I'd like to explore that one.
So should you stay for the kids? What would you guys say about that?
Well, I've certainly got my opinions, but I'm probably the most opinionated guy here. You know, it's interesting. I was just listening to a presentation by a woman, and I apologize for not remembering her name, but it was Marriage and the American Caste System. And what the study was showing is that couples who come from, or aren't couples, but children who come from intact families in this study actually make significantly more money than couples or children who don't come from intact families where a mother and a father have stayed together. And they were just kind of exploring, why is it that there's such an income difference? And in fact, they were beginning to say that there's actually a caste system that's being developed in America, which are it's a result of those kids who come from those families, because they end up doing so much better than the other children that they actually stand far beyond the others and tend to go to college and tend to marry other people. Ultimately, they go to college, and the divorce rate for those children is significantly lower than the divorce rate for families who don't do that. And so it's having a profound cultural impact at this point. And this was not any type of Christian study. It was just some interesting research that someone was doing, and just kind of raising the question, you know, what's happening to kids that come from divorced families and kind of the lower standard of living they're beginning to experience.
So you almost make it sound like you think parents should stay for the kids.
I actually would not say that they should stay for the sake of the kids. I think the kids are a consideration. In fact, when I was in college, Dr. Paul Faulkner, who lives here in Austin, I just love the man. If any of you have ever known Dr. Paul, Dr. Faulkner is amazing. But we had an argument in his class in college, and he was telling me, as we discussed about divorce, there were about 250 people, and he made a comment about not staying together about the kids and the impact of the kids. And I just said, he said, you know, he didn't think the kids were a good reason to stay together. And I said, well, Dr. Faulkner, that's just not right. And he said, Rick, when it comes to divorce, kids are just complications. And I said, you cannot say that kids are just complications when it comes to divorce. And he said, you know, ultimately, in my opinion, he said, God has to be the center of why a marriage stays together, not kids. And if you put something other than, if you put the wrong thing in the middle of this marriage, trying to make it stay together, that you don't necessarily help the probabilities of this marriage working out. And he said, you're going to be far better off trying to help them solve their issues rather than trying to motivate them for staying together for the sake of the kids.
Well, and we probably need to go to break, but we're going to come back to this question, because we have lots to say if you don't. But give us a call.
365-9930, or you can email us at rick@hope-now.com. Thank you, guys.
Do Does your life seem void of meaning? Do you struggle with depression? Is marriage not turning out as expected? Are you disappointed in the intimacy you share? Has an unwanted behavior taken your life hostage? Do uncontrollable feelings flood uninvited into your life? If so, we can help. Crossroads Counseling is a group of highly trained mental health professionals dedicated to Jesus. Crossroads Counseling is unique in its team approach. Each member has developed a specialty in order to complement their overall goal of helping each person they serve experience the freedom and abundant life afforded through the life of Christ. Give us a call, 512-346-9299. That's 512-346-9299. Or visit our website at crossroads-counseling.net. There is hope and healing. We believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Hope. Hope for the brokenhearted. Hope for those who have made a mistake. Hope for those impacted by a betrayal. Hope for couples who feel no hope. The Affair Recovery Center is designed to offer hope, direction, and help for couples and individuals whose lives have been ripped by infidelity. There is hope at the Affair Recovery Center. We can all personally testify to what God can do by what we have personally experienced. Let us help. We are a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We can be reached at affairrecovery.com, or you can call toll-free at 888-527-2367. That's 888-527-2367.
Hi, my name is Bill Quigley. You're listening to The Word 99.3 and 98.5, teaching and talk for Austin and Central Texas.
Welcome back to Affair Recovery Radio, radio to the power of God. Now, we're still on our question, should you stay together for the sake of the kids? And everybody's kind of weighing in, and you can still call in. You better hurry, though, because we want to hear your opinions. 365-9930, that's 365-9930, or you can email us at rick@hope-now.com. So, guys, what do some of the rest of you think about that?
Well, I completely agree with what you say about God has to have his proper place in this. Because I think, really, if people are staying for the kids and not even considering God, then in a strange kind of way, it makes the kids more important than God. And I've had clients who are now adults, and growing up, they knew that their mother stayed for them. And they have a lot of guilt. They felt like their mom had a lot of resentment towards them, and what the mother felt like should have been a gift for the child really did not end up being a gift at all. It ended up being a burden that they carried and had a lot of shame about, because their mother stayed in a miserable marriage where the father was maybe even abusive, never faithful, never committed, never loving. And it actually ended up being very destructive.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a perfect world, certainly if it's possible to keep the marriage intact and have children raised in a cohesive nuclear family, absolutely. That's the way it was intended to be and all. But I completely agree with you, Leslie, on that one. I think sometimes if there is a very dysfunctional marriage or it's just broken, you know, to stay just for the kids or to try to keep things together, I just don't think it's that great of an idea. I mean, I think, you know, the parent who's you know, making that sacrifice is going to be in some way showing some kind of resentment. They're going to, in some cases, be showing hostility towards the whole idea. And so what they inadvertently do with that is they model a very dysfunctional marriage for their kids.
Which is, I think, the opposite of what our caller was talking about earlier. I think that if somebody chooses what God's telling them to do and they model following God, even though it necessarily doesn't make sense to other people, then they'll have a peace about it. There will be a blessing in the household. There won't be the anger, the resentment. It'll be a completely different household because God's at the center of it.
Well, there are plenty of cases in the Bible where God didn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he had to build an ark, or when Moses had to go back to Egypt, you know, there are many, many times where he didn't make sense. And I guess I just think initially, just a slight deviation from what you guys are saying, I think maybe initially it's okay to stay for the kids as long as you're seeking God. And then sooner or later, he becomes the reason. And just like we say all the time, the best reason to stay married is because God's telling you to, and the best reason to get a divorce is because he's telling you to. Now, how about that for some controversy right there, that he might do that?
Well, and you know, actually what we're about here at the Fair Recovery Center is trying to help people find ways of salvaging those marriages, regardless of the kids. I mean, ultimately, we know that we have a God who's able to work things out, and we get to see that miracle over and over again. So, to us, I mean, the kid thing isn't as big of the issue. I mean, if people are willing to sit there and surrender and to begin to look at things, begin to work at things, there is a way out of this thing, and we see it all the time at the Fair Recovery Center.
Yeah, I mean, if we did not believe in God's overwhelming power to restore lives and marriages, we would not do what we do. Because I think that's really what he's about, and we see miracles every day, and it's wondrous. But to put the kids in at the center of whether you stay or go is too much of a burden. And I've even had clients that asked their kids, should I stay or should I go? And
bad move.
Yeah. And so then the kid has all the pressure, all the burden, all the responsibility.
Right. And the kids would never be enough. I mean, the couples we have that work things out, and again, that is by far the vast majority, somewhere between 80-90%, work it out. But they don't do it just because they're trying to do a good thing for their kids. They do it because God works a miracle in their lives. And ultimately, they've got to be able to do that. Just to surrender and let God work that out.
Because a lot of times staying for the kids is about fear. And fear ultimately points out where my faith is lacking in God. And so if I'm acting out of fear, I'm not putting God in the middle of it at all.
I would agree with that one. So John, you said you had a couple of things that you wanted to make sure that you got on the air tonight.
Well, just, you know, was kind of thinking about some just kind of ballpark guidelines for, you know, working with kids when you're in the middle of an infidelity situation or you're in a period of uncertainty and not sure where you're being called to go with it. You know, the first thing I would say is just with your children, make sure to give them an opportunity to express their feelings and really normalize those feelings. I mean, kids can be all over the map emotionally, just like you can when something like this is going on. They may feel very hopeful one moment, the next minute just be spinning out and not know, you know, how to handle it. And, you know, it's okay to allow them to express those feelings and have those feelings and kind of, you know, let them know it's normal when things are uncertain to feel like that.
And I guess the thing that I would just kind of add on to that is don't expect your teenagers to be forthcoming with their feelings.
Exactly.
You have to be a little bit more patient with them. You have to just be by their side through it because they're not going to want to talk about their feelings.
No, and you know, you hear this next one a lot, but I think it's important to remind people because sometimes we hear just the opposite. But that's to remind kids that what's going on between you and your spouse is not their fault. And, you know, if we go, you know, we could probably do a whole nother show on what not to do, you know, with your kids. And one of the big no-nos is when, you know, parents tell their kids, well, this wouldn't have happened if it weren't for you or something like that. And that, you know, unfortunately, we do hear that sometimes. But you know, don't put the blame on the kids or the responsibility on the kids. You know, try to keep them out of that altogether and reassure them on that. But I think another really important one, you know, particularly for parents who are really wrestling with guilt, is to keep things sort of behaviorally as structured and predictable and familiar as possible. You know, going back to that idea that sometimes when we feel guilty, we start, you know, indulging our kids or trying to be someone else, trying to be their friend or, you know, and sort of surrender our parent role by doing that. you know, kids really need structure. They need a sense of things being predictable, that they have some sense of control of their environment and so forth. So, you know, even if you find that there is a divorce and you're having to move to a new house and all, you know, with your behavioral expectations and the rules that were there before, you know, try to keep those same kinds of things in place so that there's some continuity and some predictability in the transition. I think, you know, Leslie, Rick, and Wayne have already talked about not bashing the other parent. I'd say that's a very, very important one. And, you know, you want to, no matter what's going on between you and your spouse or your ex-spouse, whatever the case may be, you know, you don't want to poison or try to poison the relationship that ex or that spouse has with their child or your child. You know, that's just not going to be good for anybody. And finally, I think, you know, kids can't hear this enough, but I think, Leslie, maybe you were the one who alluded to this, but you've got to constantly remind them that both parents, you know, still love them, that they're not, you know, even in a divorce situation, that they're not losing their parents, you know, that the living arrangements are going to change and sort of the way things were are going to change somewhat, but you know, both parents still really care about them.
Absolutely. And I think whether you agree with your mate's behavior or not, the best thing for your child is for them to have the best relationship possible they can have with the other parent. Because I think sometimes as parents, when we disagree with the behavior of our spouse or our ex-spouse, we think the best thing we can do is to protect our children by keeping them away from that parent. And that's just not true.
Or even worse, you know, what we see sometimes is, you know, they think, well, you know, I was married to this horrible man who did this horrible thing to me, so I'm going to get a better father in these kids' lives very quickly, and so they'll quickly remarry somebody else, and then sort of try to force the kids into embracing the new step-parent as their father, you know, insisting that they call him dad or you know, acting like the other parent doesn't exist at all, you know, and that can cause horrendous tension for a kid.
So, as we're winding up here tonight, I certainly want to thank you guys for listening in. We know you're out there because you tell us all the time.
And we appreciate you listening.
But we love it when you call in. So maybe next time you'll have the grace and the ability to jump in and talk to us now.
And next week we'll be talking about
how to have an affair. And that should be interesting. I believe that Leslie and Wayne are going to be here.
And just to be clear, we're not promoting affairs, but a lot of times people are engaged in behaviors that are actually leading them towards an affair, and they're not even aware of it.
That's right. And we have an EMS weekend coming up on the 27th, 28th, and 29th of July. We would certainly encourage you, if you're in crisis, to give us a call. You can also go to our website, affairrecovery.com. We have 30 free days of membership at this point. So if you're struggling, this would be a great time to go to our website. Everything is free, and at least the memberships. And you can sign up and get a mentor couple and begin to get some specific help. As again, that's affairrecovery.com, or you can call us at our office at area code 512-346-9299. That's area code 512-346-9299. We want to thank all of you guys for listening in and being a part of our discussion. And may God bless you this week.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.